Nehemiah chapter 13. We're going to look at other parts of this book or leave them with you. But in verse 14, Nehemiah prays a very interesting thing in this chapter. We read, "Remember me, O my God, concerning this, and wipe not out my good deeds that I have done for the house of my God and for the offices thereof." A man came to Martin Luther and he asked him a very, very searching question. He said, "Martin, if you knew you were going to die tomorrow, what would you do?" Martin Luther responded, "Well, I would go outside and I would plant a tree." The reason he said this is that he meant that he would want to leave a legacy of life that would grow on and on into the future. Max Jukes was an individual who did not leave a good legacy. He was an atheist. He was born in America. Then he married an atheist as well. From this marriage came 1,026 descendants. In surveying their family tree, 300, they died prematurely. 100 were sent to prison. 190 sold themselves into vice. 100 were drunkards. And the family in total cost the state of New York $1.1 million. Max Jukes, he left a bad legacy. Jonathan Edwards, however, he left a good legacy. Saved by the grace of God, he entered the ministry and he married a godly young Christian. And from this marriage, there were 729 descendants. Of that 729, 300 were preachers, 65 were professors, 13 were presidents of universities, 6 were authors, 3 were United States congressmen, and 1 was even a vice president of America. And during his life, he realized that if he could impact the generation after him, that they would then in turn impact the generation after them. He left a good legacy. And as we close out in our studies in Nehemiah, we are met by a man who left a good, lasting legacy. Nehemiah, as we remember him, we will remember many things about his life. But we will remember first and foremost that he lived a life that counted. He was a man that possessed wonderful hope, trust and confidence and reliance upon his God. You remember whenever he first entered Jerusalem in chapter 2, how he realized that he was confronted by a mammoth undertaking. Whilst the temple had been rebuilt externally, the city was still in need of extensive reconstruction. The walls needed rebuilt, the gates they needed rebuilt, the people themselves they needed remotivated. Nehemiah, as he entered the once glorious walls of Jerusalem, he quickly learned that he faced probably the biggest rebuilding project that any man had ever faced. And during this process, there were problems. There was external opposition. There was internal dejection. Yet despite all of the problems that Nehemiah faced, we find that he rebuilt the walls along with his fellow laborers in just 52 short days. And when we survey his faith and his character and his determination to get the work done, does Nehemiah not leave a lasting legacy, a lasting impression for good upon all who would consider him? You see, upon death, whilst the Christian enters heaven, he will still be remembered on earth. His deeds, yes, will be recorded in heaven, but they will also be remembered in earth. One day, if you're saved, if you're trusting and resting in Christ and his work, you will enter heaven, and you will be remembered in heaven. But remember this, you'll also be remembered on earth. We all leave lasting legacies. Some of us, we leave legacies like Max Jukes. We leave bad legacies. Others, we leave legacies like Edwards. We leave good legacies. The challenge to us today is, what type of legacy will we leave? Will we leave a lasting impression upon those whom we came into contact with? Have we done all that we could? Have we been as faithful as we perhaps could have been? And so this morning, just for a few moments, I want us to just take a little step back in time And I want to just simply reflect upon the type of man that Nehemiah was. And I want to speak this morning on the subject of the abiding memory of Nehemiah. The abiding memory of Nehemiah. I think we notice firstly here that in this book, and indeed this chapter, that he was a man of action. Of action. Verse 8 we read that it grieved me sore. Therefore I cast forth all the household stuff of Tobiah out of the chamber. From start to finish, Nehemiah, does he not come across as a man of action? He was a man who got things done, wasn't he? You remember in chapter 1 when we first met Nehemiah, he was in Shushan the palace. He was an advisor, a cupbearer to Artaxerxes the king. But when he heard about the walls being burnt down and the gates thereof being burnt with fire, what did Nehemiah do? He immediately offered himself to go to Jerusalem and to be part of the problem. Then in chapter 2, when he arrived at Jerusalem, he confronted the issue, but he then proceeded to deal with the issue. He could have looked at Jerusalem, could have looked at the rubble that he faced, and he could have said, no, there's too much work to do. I can't do it. He could have turned back and went back to Persia. But no, we find him going out at night and surveying the wall, seeing how bad the issue really was. Then in chapter 4, as he faced the slander of the enemy, we still read in that chapter that half of the wall was built. In chapter 5, when he confronted the greedy Jews for charging too much rent, we find he dealt with the issue. Then in chapter 13, we have been seeing the last few weeks that there were many, many problems that Nehemiah faced as he then came back to Jerusalem. However, we again find he was a man of action. When he found the reading of the word was neglected, we find that he reinstated the public reading of the word. Whenever he discovered Tobiah in the house of God, in a place that he shouldn't have been, what did he do? He went to Tobiah, he got all of his household stuff, and he removed Tobiah from the temple. Nehemiah will be remembered as a man of action. And we are to be remembered not as individuals of apathy, but as individuals of action. To remember, be remembered as one who actually acted for the Lord. One of the greatest ways that the saved and the unsaved will remember you here on earth is by what you did, by what you really did. Is it not true that we often say actions speak louder than words? They'll remember what you did. They'll remember your zeal. They'll remember your enthusiasm. They'll remember the times when you went to them and you witnessed to them and you implored them to come to Christ. And it will be what you have done that they will remember. Indeed, you remember Christ as he was approaching his crucifixion. He was in a house, a home in Bethany. And there we find that it was the house of Simon. And as they were gathered there together and the disciples were there, there was another lady who was in the house as well. And she came to Christ, and having more spiritual perception than the disciples, she knew that Christ was going to die soon. And she took a precious box of alabaster ointment, and she poured it upon Christ's head. And in doing this, she was displaying her consecration to Christ. The disciples, they wanted to try and discourage this lady and downplay and degrade what she had done. But in commending this lady, we read in Mark 14, verses 8 and 9, Christ said, she hath done what she could. Verily I say unto you, that wheresoever this gospel be preached throughout the whole world, also this that she hath done shall be spoken of for a memorial of her. You see, it was what she had done that was remembered. And whilst you may never be remembered for your words, you will be remembered for your works. What you have done will be remembered. It will not be what you might have done or what you should have done or even what you could have done. But it will be actually that which you have done will be remembered. The challenge to us today Is it not, are we not men and women of action? Will, when we look back at our lives, will we really have lived a life that's counted? Will we truly be men and women, individuals of action? Could we say that whenever the person who's looking at our lives, could they say there was someone who did something? There was someone who lived a life that counted. You know, there was a man named Larry, and he wanted to see his neighbourhood from a different perspective. He went to an army surplus store and he bought 45 weather balloons. He filled them with helium and he then tied them to his chair. And he decided that he wanted to see his neighbourhood from a different perspective. He would ascend the clouds and sit in his chair and look at his neighbourhood. He didn't go empty-handed. He brought with him some peanuts, a bottle of water and some sandwiches, and also a BB gun to shoot the balloons whenever he felt ready to land. As soon as he got in the chair, it spiraled out of control. It went far higher than he could ever imagined. He was sitting there in his chair, apparently at 10,000 feet. In Los Angeles, he ascended so high that he actually stopped the airport from functioning properly. He was afraid. He was afraid to shoot the balloons down. Eventually, we find the balloons, one by one, they began to pop because of pressure. Whenever he landed back down in his neighbourhood, there were newspapers there waiting. There was reporters there waiting, and he was interviewed immediately. One reporter asked, "Were you scared?" He said, "Yes." They asked him, "Would you do it again?" He said, "Definitely not." And then they asked him, "Well, why did you do it?" And this was Larry's response. He said, "Because you can't just sit there." And Nehemiah was a man who just couldn't sit there. He just couldn't sit still. He had to be doing something. He was a man of action. Are we individuals of action? Will we be remembered for what we have done? He was a man of action, but I think in thinking about the abiding memory of Nehemiah, that he was also a man of intercession. Intercession, verse 14, we read, "Remember me, O my God, concerning this, and wipe not out my good deeds that I have done for the house of my God and for the offices thereof." Nehemiah was a man of action, but he was also a man of prayer. Throughout the book, he is depicted as a person who is constantly coming to the Lord in prayer. You remember in chapter 1, as soon as he heard the news about the gates of Jerusalem being broken and the walls being burnt down, what was Nehemiah's response? It was Nehemiah's response to immediately come to the Lord in prayer. Chapter 1, verse 4, "When I heard these words, I sat down and wept, and mourned certain days, and fasted, and prayed before the God of heaven." Then in chapter 2, when he wanted an opportunity to actually go to Jerusalem, we find he prayed silently for an opportunity. In chapter 4, when he faced the opposition of the enemy, what was Nehemiah's response? He prayed. In chapter 5, after dealing with the greedy Jews, we read in verse 19, "Think upon me, my God, for good." In chapter 6, as he then faced intensifying opposition, verse 14 again, "My God, think thou upon Tobiah and Sanballat according to their works." Again, in this last chapter, we find that as he dealt with issue after issue, neglected scripture, neglected Sabbath, neglected separation, he constantly brought the matter to the Lord in prayer. And I think it's very, very interesting. At the last verse of this book, what is Nehemiah doing? He's leaving the entire matter to God. He was someone who constantly left issues, no matter how big, no matter how small, he was constantly leaving them with God. And whilst we are to be remembered for our labor, we are also to be remembered for our leaning, to be remembered as an individual of prayer. Nehemiah was a man of prayer. Are we? Are we individuals of prayer? As you leave this scene of time, could it be said of you, well, with that person, they were constantly walking with God, constantly leaving matters to the Lord, constantly leaning upon Him, constantly looking to Him for grace and for strength. Will you be remembered for your faithfulness in the place of public prayer and also the place of private prayer? Indeed, in speaking about Cornelius, you read in Acts 10, verse 4, when he looked on him, he was afraid and said, "What is it, Lord?" And he said unto him, "Thy prayers and thine alms are come up for a memorial before God." Cornelius was a very important man. We're told that he was a centurion. This means that he had charge over 100 Roman soldiers. And yet, what is it that is remembered and what was a memorial of Cornelius? It was his prayers. The Lord remembered his prayers. And whilst you will never be remembered for your possessions, you will be remembered for your praying. They will be a memorial before heaven and earth. Possessions, ultimately, they're worthless. 1 Peter tells us they're wood, hay, and stubble. They will be burned up one day and they will be of no value. But the unseen, the intangible, that unseen hidden work of prayer, it will be remembered. It will be remembered. And so today, the challenge again is, are we going to be remembered of individuals of action? And are we going to be remembered as individuals of supplication and intercession? Are we going to be remembered as those who are looking to the Lord, who are constantly leaning on Him? When we face decisions, we say, well, we need to see what the mind of God is about this. When we maybe face challenges or trials or difficulties, will our loved ones say, well, they were leaving the matter with the Lord in prayer? Writing about a minister of the United Methodist Church, a friend stated that they remembered him as a gifted prayer warrior. They stated when he prayed, he spoke as an angel. The hearer would hang on to every phrase and word. His prayer vocabulary was authentic. And when he prayed, you knew that he was in close communion with God. A man named John Hyde, he was known as a always praying. And he is known in evangelical circles as Praying Hyde. Will we be remembered as warriors of prayer, as wrestlers of prayer, or as runners? As runners from the place of prayer. Nehemiah, he was a man who was all action. He was a man who you could count on to get things done. But he was also a man who spent much time on his knees. He was a man of action. He was a man of intercession. I think we notice thirdly that he was a man of perception. Perception. Verse 8, we read, "I came to Jerusalem and understood the evil that Eliashib did for Tobiah in preparing him a chamber in the courts of the house of God." Nehemiah was a man of prayer. But it could not be said of Nehemiah that he was so heavenly minded that he was of no earthly use. Because whilst he was a man who acted, a man of action, he was also very wise. Remember that although Nehemiah was predominantly raised in Persia, Nehemiah was actually a Jew. And Nehemiah would have known his Jewish Bible fairly well. And I believe that Nehemiah would have known the Proverbs of Solomon. Perhaps Nehemiah, coming across Proverbs 4 verse 70, really made that his motto text. Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom. I can imagine Nehemiah as he comes to Jerusalem, as he sees the problem, as he sees the wreckage, as he sees the ruins, constantly leaning on the Lord. He's saying, "Lord, wisdom's the principal thing. Lord, I need wisdom. Lord, I need understanding. Lord, I need help to deal with this matter." Because as he prayed, he had tremendous insight and intelligence. You remember in chapter 2, full of zeal and full of enthusiasm, he had just heard about his friends in Jerusalem. The walls were burning and they were in need of help. But did Nehemiah just come to King Artaxerxes and say, "Look, I want to go to Jerusalem, let me go now"? No, we find he was very wise. He prayed silently. He was waiting his opportunity. And then at the right time, when the opportunity arose, he then asked Artaxerxes, could he go to Jerusalem? Again in chapter 2, when he arrived, firstly arrived at Jerusalem, saw the wreckage, saw the ruin, He went out at night and he surveyed the city. And verse 16 tells us, the rulers knew not whither I went or what I did. Can you imagine him tiptoeing through the city at night, ensuring that no one else sees him? Chapter 4, when he realized that the workers had been working too hard, what did wise Nehemiah do? He saw them discouraged, saw them lonely. And so he sent them back home to spend some time with their families, their wives and their children. Again, in chapter 8, he also realized his weaknesses. Whenever Ezra the preacher, the scribe, came upon the scene and was going to read the word, Nehemiah, he took a step back. He recognized that he was a man for the hands-on job. This was not his area of expertise. Again, in the last chapter, after dealing with issues, we saw last week that he then put measures in place to ensure the issues didn't become issues again. And yes, he'll be remembered for his action, and he'll be remembered for his intercession. But he'll also be remembered for his perception, for his godly insight in how he handled matters. And whilst the Lord desires you to work and to wait, he also desires you to be wise. To be wise as you work. Good to be a person of action. Good to be full of zeal, full of enthusiasm. Good to be like the Lord who said, the zeal of thine house hath eaten me up. But sometimes in your zeal, sometimes you can make mistakes. And so you need wisdom. You need wisdom to ensure that you don't make those mistakes. I wonder, were you going to be remembered as someone who carefully plotted and carefully planned rather than diving in thoughtlessly to a situation? Ecclesiastes 12:11 states, the words of the wise are as goads and as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. You'll know when you take a nail and you hammer it into a piece of wood or whatever it is you're hammering it into, you hope it stays there, don't you? You hope it's fastened. If you've done the right job, it's fastened. It stays there. It's not going anywhere for quite some time. What does Solomon say? That the words of the wise are like? They're like a nail. Fastened. Fastened in the memory of those that heard them. And whilst the foolish are forgotten, the wise are remembered. Like the nail. They're fastened in the mind. Wonder, will your words be like the nail? Wonder, as you depart and you leave this scene of time, will you be remembered as an individual who had perception, who used their words wisely, who carried themselves graciously, who acted with tremendous wisdom in this world? He was a man of action, a man of interception, a man of perception. But also, I want you to see lastly, that he was a man of conviction. Conviction. Verse 9 we read, then I commanded, and they cleansed the chambers. And thither brought I again the vessels of the house of God with the meat offering and the frankincense. Nehemiah was a wise individual. He was constantly in prayer, leaving matters with the Lord and leaving difficult issues with him. Nehemiah, we can assume he was an easy man to work with. You think about it, all of those workers on the wall, and they all got the job done in 52 days. Nehemiah was, I don't think I'm out of place in saying this, Nehemiah would have been an easy man to work with. But there came that time when Nehemiah had to take a stand for what was right and what was scriptural. There were occasions when he needed to take a stand, and Nehemiah, again, he did this. You remember in chapter 6, when the enemy came and sought to stop him as the work neared completion, verse 3, he stated, I am doing a great work so that I cannot come down. Again in verse 11, he said, should such a man as I flee? In chapter 5, whenever the Jews were charging their fellow Jews a too high an interest rate on their mortgages, he dealt with the issue. Again in the last chapter, Whenever there was an unbiblical issue, he took his stand. He dealt with the wrong that he confronted. And when faced with transgression, you ultimately need conviction. A conviction to stand up for truth. You know, it's one thing to have prudence. It's one thing to have perception. One thing to have insight and to see an issue that's wrong and that it needs dealt with. It's another thing to deal with it. It's another thing, as it were, to put your hand in that issue and grab the nettle where it hurts. And I wonder at times, whenever the opportunity arises, have you that conviction? Perhaps in work or in place of employment or wherever it might be that the Lord has placed you. Wonder whenever you see that there's wrongdoing. You see maybe perhaps there's an area where you need to take your stand. Wonder, do you take your stand? Wonder will you be remembered as an individual of conviction? There are so many testimonies of this in the Bible. You think of Joseph whenever he was tempted by Potiphar's wife. What was Joseph's response? How can I do this great wickedness and sin against my God? You think of Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego when they were asked to bow before that pagan statue. They said no, and they were cast into a fire. Whenever we're confronted by sin, there then needs to be a confrontation of sin, a standing up for what is right. I wonder, like Nehemiah, will you be remembered like as an individual like that? A person who not only sees the wrong, but a person who does the right. A person who does the right thing at the right time. The abiding memory of Nehemiah. Proverbs 10 verse 7 states, "The memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot." Wonder, will our name, will it be that which carries on? Will it be that which has a lasting, positive legacy? Or will it be like the name of the wicked? Will it be a name that rots? May God bless his word to your hearts and lives this morning.